You may be seated. Our next case is 13-552 and 13-805, State of Ohio versus James D. Black. For the appellant, Ms. Bates.
Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Emily Bates, and I represent the appellant in this case, the State of Ohio, County of Ashland. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. The question before the court today is whether the term penal or correctional institution of a party state, as contained in Revised Code 2963.30, applies to only a state-run prison or penitentiary. The answer to that question is yes, for three reasons. First, the plain and ordinary meaning of the terms penal or correctional institution of a party state indicate a state-run prison facility and not a local or county jail. Second, when referencing the remainder of Revised Code 2963.30 in comparison to Section 3, the language used indicates that a penal or correctional institution of any state would not include a jail. The term jail is included further in 2963.30 in paragraph D of Section 5 of that statute. Third, interpreting Section 3 of the agreement to include temporary jail inmates would not advance the agreement's purposes, which includes uninterrupted rehabilitation of a prisoner in a long-term prison facility. Article 3 of 2963.30 specifies that a prisoner must have entered a prison term of imprisonment in a penal or correctional institution of a party state. This indicates that the facility must be state-run. Particularly, the term party state is defined at the beginning of the statute. That definition includes a state of the United States itself, Puerto Rico. What that statute does not include is a political subdivision of any state. These would include the counties and municipalities of Ohio, which would include jails and correctional facilities run by local government.
Counsel, to agree with your argument today, do we have to, as a court, say a county jail is not a penal institution? Do we have to say that?
Yes, Your Honor. Based on the definitions contained both in Black's Law Dictionary and the definitions contained in several of the revised code sections, I believe the court can.
I thought Black's Law Dictionary went away from your argument when it says it's a generic term to describe all places of confinement for those convicted of crimes, such as jails.
Yes, Your Honor. In the Fifth District, in their opinion in the lower court, did define it using the fifth edition of Black's Law Dictionary. If the court looks to the ninth version, the current version of Black's Law Dictionary that would have been published in 2009.
Well, excuse me, but I think we would rather be the authority rather than Black. So are you telling us today you want us to say a county jail is not a penal institution?
Well, yes, Your Honor, but it's not just the Black's Law Dictionary definition that I'm asking the court to accept. It's several places in the Ohio Revised Code that defines a penal or correctional institution of a state as a penitentiary. Basically, Ohio Revised Code Section 5145 addresses penitentiaries in Ohio, defines the penitentiary as a state correctional institution. On the other hand, Section 345 of the Ohio Revised Code addresses jails, and there are two completely different sections addressed by the Revised Code defined in different ways.
But this particular statute requires us to give liberal construction, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Couldn't an argument be made that liberal construction would suggest that a county jail is a penal institution by virtue of the fact nobody's leaving until the jailer says you're leaving?
No, Your Honor, it wouldn't be a liberal construction of the statute. It would be adding something into the statute that simply isn't there. The statute does not define penal or correctional institution, but that is known as a prison or penitentiary facility based on a reading of the rest of the statute. And the statute does contain the term jail within its within the basis of the statute in paragraph D of section 5. However, they do not include that in section 3, which is the contested section in this case.
In other states, for example, Arizona, I think the comment is that Arizona talks about jails and prisons being functionally equivalent. Is that because of the statutes that they have as opposed to the statutes that we have here in Ohio?
Your Honor, I believe that the statutes in Arizona addressing jails and prison are similar. They have two separate statutes that kind of define what those facilities are. As far as rehabilitation that's provided in those facilities, I believe Revised Code 2963.30, the real purpose is so that prisoners can receive rehabilitation in the different types of facilities. So while Arizona does have similar setup as Ohio does as in terms of jails and prisons, the rehabilitation that somebody receives in a jail in Ohio versus a prison in Ohio is much different. And that's really what the statute is attempting to address, is these long-term stays in a prison facility where prisoners won't be interrupted with their rehabilitation.
What is the purpose of the AID?
The purpose of the statute is set forth basically so that prisoners are allowed their speedy trial rights. Essentially, some prisoners were being kept in prison 7 to 8 years before they were disposed of their charges in other jurisdictions, had detainers remaining. So basically, the purpose is so that prisoners have the opportunity to address these detainers, have a speedy trial, and that they can stay in the facility and get the rehabilitation they need without constant interruption.
But
also,
But don't we have to look then at what was really happening in Maryland? And in Maryland, isn't it true that Maryland does not distinguish between jail and prison? And so your concern about the interruption of the rehabilitative services, it would have been interrupted then. Am I right about that?
In this case, Your Honor, and I believe Maryland does actually distinguish between the jails and the prison. It is present in the record that Mr. Black testified that some prison inmates were held at the county jail. It was a facility up to 3 years, but he was being held in a jail, and I think there is a distinction in Maryland between prisons and jails. The prison inmates, according to Mr. Black in the record, were being held there pre-release from prison.
Okay.
So I think there is a difference between prisons and jails in Maryland. And also Maryland's interstate agreement on detainers is actually a different statute than we have here in Ohio because they've added in the definitions for...
But counsel, if we agree with you, and I think I do, that the purpose of the statute is to protect speedy trial rights, what legal effect does it have if the person is in a jail or a prison if we're trying to protect a constitutional right?
Well, and I think the Supreme Court of the United States has addressed the issue of whether or not speedy trial applies to persons in prisons, and it definitely does. A person can't sit there for 7 or 8 years while the state waits with a pending indictment. As far as a county-run facility, by its nature, a county-run jail is a temporary placement for anyone.
But people stay there for a year.
Yes. Under a year, Your Honor, is basically...
So are we to say that you can violate the Constitution for 1 year but not two?
Well, it would be my argument to the court today that in staying in a county facility, the defendant has made himself unavailable for trial at that time. I know a pretrial detainee is for certain unavailable for trial, but when somebody is in this intermediate temporary placement... the state is arguing that he would be unavailable for trial at that point.
Can you help me, Ms. Bates, factually with what occurred? After Mr. Black was presented in Ashland County, he was indicted and arraigned and then returned to Maryland? Am I right about that?
He had three pending indictments in Ohio at the time he was in Maryland.
Yeah, one was in Richland County.
Richland County, Franklin County, and Ashland County.
And Richland and Franklin were resolved, but the Ashland County case is the one we're concerned about.
Yes, Your Honor.
So he was brought to Ashland County and indicted and arraigned.
Initially, he was brought to Richland County, Your Honor, on their indictment. He sent three requests out to each of the three counties saying that he wanted to get through with his charges, and Richland County was the county that brought him back from Maryland. While he was in Richland County.
Richland County delivered him to Ashland County.
Yes.
And what happened in Ashland County?
He was arraigned on his pending indictment in that case.
And then what happened?
He was sent back to Richland County where he completed his case. I believe he was given a probationary term in that case, and they sent him back to Maryland subsequently.
And were they supposed to send him back to Maryland, or were they supposed to return him to Ashland?
They were supposed to return him to Ashland County, Your Honor. We had a holder on him, and he was still under the bond order, so.
And didn't his speedy trial rights commence when he was arraigned in Ashland County?
Yes.
So are you suggesting, therefore, when the state, let's just say charitably, erroneously returned him to Maryland, that those speedy trial rights stopped?
No, I don't believe the speedy trial rights stopped, Your Honor, no. I think what the appellee's argument is going to be is that they started way back in January when he first filed that request for disposition of his charges. The state is not arguing that after the arraignment. No, we would agree with the court that the trial would be, speedy trial time would be running at that point. Subsequent to that, though, Mr. Black would not return to the state of Ohio. He did eventually come back to Medina County where we found him, but.
Well, let me ask you the question I wanted to get to. Those initial charges were dismissed, were they not? And he was reindicted?
On the 2010 case, he was reindicted, yes.
What was the purpose of that? What was the purpose of dismissing the first case?
I believe there was a plea agreement. He was initially charged with a breaking and entering, and the state offered him an agreement that we wouldn't charge a burglary if he had pled to the breaking and entering in the initial case. And so when he was kind of fighting the case, I think we reindicted on the burglary. Ashland County did.
So there were two charges, two cases then, or was the first one dismissed?
The first one was dismissed, Your Honor.
Right. Does that have any application then, or any basis in his return to Ohio, the dismissal of the case that he was here on?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because I believe that time would be told because the defendant was, we didn't know where he was from 2010 until he appeared in the Maryland jail in, I believe, December of 2010. Right. Was the first time we caught up with him, so.
How does Escalante impact your position here?
It's an appeals court decision out of Arizona, and they have defined that law basically to apply to any jail, stating that jails and prisons are essentially the same. I would disagree with the court's reasoning in that case, in that the rehabilitative process is very different in jails and in prisons.
So if we agree with your position, what do you want us to write?
Your Honor, I would like the court to make a rule that a county is not required to bring somebody from a jail back and forth where they are serving a jail term on a short-term basis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Define short-term at that point.
Well, I would say under a year, Your Honor. That's generally the term that a jail term is. I realize they could be longer, but jails generally are a short-term facility as opposed to the prison where you're going
to
be extended.
So the statute is told for speedy trial purposes while the individual's serving jail?
Yes.
In another state?
Yes,
or jurisdiction?
Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
But not told if they're in prison?
I don't know. It wouldn't be told in prison pursuant to the United States Supreme Court's decision thus far as speedy trial. So they say speedy trial applies to people in prisons. So.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Mason.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, I'm Daniel Mason, attorney for Appellee James Black. I think this is a very important statute where so many states come together and agree on one thing. It's probably because it's very important. And back in 1969, they did that. And virtually every jurisdiction, including the federal jurisdictions, have adopted the IAD. It's a model act. It's, as far as Ohio State has adopted it, we appear to have adopted it word for word. It's the only statute I'm quite aware of that has, here's the statute, and it says Article 1, Article 2, et cetera. It's a format we don't normally have, and it appears in the model statute. I think the reason that's very important is it needs to have a model approach, a national approach. Let's look at it how other states will look at it and try to adopt language and interpret the language, not how it might be simply in a parochial Ohio version where we borrow words from statutes that have a particular meaning in our correctional system or state institute, or how those words are used and defined, particularly in our statutes. But let's
it's a model act, but it's been interpreted by different state courts differently, hasn't it?
Yes, some have.
So Arizona has one view, and Nevada and Indiana have a different view.
Yes, and if we
and has Ohio spoken on this? Has Ohio spoken on this?
Two courts have, and that's why there's a conflict. The court below, in our case, did a clearly a much more thorough analysis and looked at what other states do, whereas the other court, it's very short analysis, and I don't think it took a national view of this. And I think that's the important thing about this model act.
What other courts have addressed this?
In nationally or in the state?
Yeah, nationally. Are there other state Supreme Courts beyond Nevada or Indiana?
It's not gotten to a lot of state Supreme Courts. It's got to a lot of appellate courts and also federal courts. The Felix Court and the was one that took looked at it nationally. Obviously, Escalante looked at what the other states do. People versus Walton looked at a lot of states, including some states that have said, well, it doesn't apply to what they termed county jails. But most of the presumption was that county jails don't provide rehabilitation, so the theory was, it really doesn't apply to them. I think that's an erroneous view, as the courts that have looked at it with more analysis would agree. And not just because it's an erroneous view, because many counties' facilities do provide rehabilitation, but also because the statute isn't simply about rehabilitation, it's also about speedy trial. And if you're being held in Maryland, Cecil County Detention Center, for up to 3 years under Maryland law, why are you being treated differently if they had put you in a Maryland state prison system? Because you can go either place there.
But isn't that precisely the problem? Different states treat jails differently.
I don't believe
some of them are holding facilities and awaiting trial largely,
yes,
and others, as Maryland, is used for a different purpose. So how can we say one size fits all?
Well, I think the key phrase, the dichotomy jail versus prison, is not in the AD. The only time you see the word jail is in the context of a temporary place where somebody's awaiting trial. The real key language is term of imprisonment. And it doesn't say in a jail or in a prison. It says term of imprisonment in a penal or a correctional institution. So once you've entered into a term of imprisonment, and it doesn't say over a year or 6 months, but once you enter into a term of imprisonment, this law should apply to you wherever you happen to be. If perhaps that county does or does not have rehabilitative services, you still have the issue of the speedy trial. But I, as the one court pointed out, it might be very difficult to assess every state's or every prisoner's rehabilitative status to decide whether the IAD applies. So if we look at it in a broader remedial context, we should probably apply it to anybody serving a term of imprisonment in a penal or correctional institute. The appellate court below looked at the term penal institution and correctional institution and said, well, it was a generic term describing prisons, jails, reformatories, places of correction. And that was the Black's Law Dictionary version from 1979. Now, the statute was passed in 69. I think we need to look at how these words were used at the time the Model Act came into play, as opposed to maybe a developed way it's looked in a subsequent dictionary 40 years later. So I think that if we look at it and apply it in a remedial manner, and of course the statute even says to construe it, to construe any ambiguous terms in a manner to support the primary purpose of this statute, which is a speedy, efficacious resolving of detainers.
Counsel, if we agree with you and the Court of Appeals, what happens in this case? It seems to me that the Court of Appeals said remand to the trial court. Has there been a finding, therefore, that the speedy trial rights were violated in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. The trial court agreed that if the IAD applied, then the speedy trial rights were violated. And that's an issue, I believe, of the facts combined with the substantive law. I don't think anybody has argued at any point in time that it does not seriously apply and would have been violated, but for whether IAD applied.
So for a simple guy like me, what we're really saying is that when he said, I'm available for trial, but unfortunately I'm in Maryland, your position would be, well, then he should have been brought here for trial.
Yeah, he's required to be brought by the receiving state, who's part of this model act. They've agreed to take him. And the interesting thing about the statute is if we read it the way the appellant is saying now that they want it read, I mean, they utilized the IAD to bring him here and to arraign him, but then when he got transferred out underneath them, they said, well, no, it doesn't apply. But interestingly, the statute, if we read it the way they want to read it, in Article 4, it would be that the state here can request, any officer of any county or of any jurisdiction can request in Maryland, come here. We have a detainer. We want to try you here. And the person has to be transferred unless the governor says no. He has 30 days to say no. Other than that, he has to be transferred. And that could be it says in any state, in any party state, not of the state, not of the correctional institutions belonging to the state, but anywhere in that state. So
an officer here, it would be your position, therefore, that the state caused this problem by not demanding his return from Maryland?
No.
Was there ever a request from Ashland County to Maryland saying, hey, we need that guy over here for a trial?
No. He requested it pretty quickly, soon after he entered the term of imprisonment. But I assume that they would have known, and they had the detainer on him, and they could have requested it, and they had the right to request it, even though it was a, quote, county jail, a detention center, actually. They had the right, but under their theory, he did not have the right to demand to be transferred back for the speedy trial and the disposition of the detainers. And I did, one of the cases cited by the appellant in their supplement indicated, had language saying that about the detainers, that these detainers, which hang over the person's head until they're out, and theoretically it's an untried indictment, so it could go on for some time, those with detainers are deemed escape risks, and so they don't get a lot of the rehabilitative services otherwise. And the court, it was just a Supreme Court saying in Smith versus Hoey, detainers are corrosive on attempts to rehabilitate. And that's why this is an important statute, because in this case, Mr. Black had mental health issues, addiction issues, and he couldn't get, because of these detainers, he wasn't qualified because of the risk. And that's what the statute's for. And the statute, they argued in their brief that it would save a little bit of money if they can't demand to be transferred if they're in a county jail. I would submit, if we're interrupting the rehabilitative process of a prisoner for no other reason than it would cost us money to come here, to bring him here, then they shouldn't keep that detainer on him.
Doesn't the speedy trial toll when an individual is being held on another charge in another facility?
My understanding is it does.
Then why would there be even a speedy trial issue here if your client was detained in Maryland until such time as he had been released from Maryland?
Right. And then the speedy trial would go
to recommence the running of the speedy trial.
Right.
How do we get to this issue?
because that's why the IAD was adopted. In fact, Ohio has its own sort of internal IAD that they can transfer somebody from the county to any county to expedite a speedy trial. But nationally, this will allow for speedy trials. In fact, they're required speedy trials, because if we don't have a speedy trial, besides the effect on effect on rehabilitation and the policy of it hanging over the head of the one accused, it's also evidence gets stale. And somebody sitting in court or in jail for 20 years, 3 years, should have a right to have their trial done sooner rather than later.
You're saying his request to be returned to Ohio reinstituted the speedy trial time? Is that what you're arguing?
Under the IAD, yes. It has its own speedy trial provisions, which can be moved, you know, if you file a motion to dismiss, or can be told for good reasons. But otherwise, they have 120 days, 180 days, and then the one transfer rule. So that one of the courts speaks of prisoner shuttling, because this state has Franklin County has a detainer. Okay, bring him here, and they decide they want to try him, and then he goes back to Maryland. Okay, then Richland calls him, but it's just one time now under the IAD rather than this prisoner shuttling. So it's a statute designed for efficiency, not just for the prisoner but for the state. And I think in the long run, if this statute is read the way the appellant would have it, they're reading it narrowly instead of broader for its purpose, and it will actually cause a greater increase in the recidivist rate because of a failure of rehabilitation, and so which is a long run as more of a cost on society than mere transfer costs. One other last thing I wanted to point out is if we read the statute, jails and prisons terms aren't in there, and sometimes I think they're trying to possibly say term of imprisonment. Well, that implies being in prison, but that's because the term of imprisonment is a generic word. We don't have the words term of jailment. I looked it up. I didn't find it anywhere in our jurisprudence. Or term of workhousement. It's just a generic word, term of imprisonment. And from that imprisonment, they're trying to get prison out of it. And prison in Ohio simply means a state-run facility. So it's a real step-by-step where they're missing some steps. Instead of looking at the overall purpose of the statute, which says construe it liberally in favor of speedy trials and rehabilitation. And that's what we asked the court to do. Otherwise, I think it would be a case-by-case situation where, well, let's look at the rehabilitative status of every individual or every county to see if this IAD really needs to be done. And I think that's asking a little bit too much for a court in a county sitting there deciding, is this transfer valid, is it not? And so therefore, I would say let's apply it to anybody entering a term of imprisonment, just as the majority of states have done that. Is there any other questions? Thank you.
Counsel, you have a little over a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I would bring to the court's attention that several state courts in the United States have found for the state's position in this case. That includes the Nevada Supreme Court, the Idaho Supreme Court, the Nevada Supreme Court, and the Indiana Supreme Court. Additionally, federally, the 1st, 6th, and 10th districts have found for the state's position that we're asking the court for in this case, and that the IAD does not apply to a county or local facility such as a jail. Additionally, I would mention to the court that the state is not making the argument that a term of imprisonment makes it prison. It's the correctional institution or penal institution that the state believes refers to only a prison in this case, and would ask the court to adopt that view as well. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decisions. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.